This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Italy has rejected scathing criticism from the United Nations about its hardline approach to blocking migrants seeking to reach Europe from Libya.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Zimbabweans face a second day of political uncertainty today, with rumors surfacing about how and when President Robert Mugabe would relinquish control after nearly four decades in power. Kenya's Supreme Court is in its last day of hearing arguments on two petitions contesting results of the October 26 presidential election, and the UN Special Mission in Libya issues proposals for amending the political agreement among Libya's competing factions. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, tensions mounted in Zimbabwe today as Southern African leaders met behind closed doors in Harare and in Botswana's capital to try to defuse the situation following Tuesday's military takeover. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Hopes of a speedy and smooth resolution in Zimbabwe appeared to fade Thursday, as civil society and religious groups urged Robert Mugabe to quickly step down after 37 years in power. But he appeared to resist, and South Africa's president then dashed hopes of a quick final act, telling his parliament that it is too early to take any firm decision now. Mugabe hasn't been seen in public since being placed under house arrest by soldiers Tuesday night. Mediators sent by the South African government met at Mugabe's home Thursday and at State House. Analyst Knox Chitio of the Chatham House think tank, who is Zimbabwean, was in Harare when the military brought out its tanks Tuesday night. He says the longer the military is perceived to be in charge, the more unstable things will become.
The key issue is the time scale. The military will want these negotiations to be completed as quickly as possible. They want to have the president, or if it's acting president, in place as soon as possible. They want an interim administration announced, I think, as soon as possible. The military do not want this to drag out, because the longer all this drags out, the murkier, the messier it could become.
Some key figures in Zimbabwe's opposition are proposing a transitional government ahead of the elections already planned for next year. Opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai on Thursday urged Mr. Mugabe to resign.
Mr. Robert Mugabe must resign. Step down immediately in line with the national sentiment and expectation, taking full regard of his legacy and a contribution to Zimbabwe, pre and post Zimbabwe.
The vice president Mugabe recently fired, arguably the catalyst for this military takeover, has kept a low profile. Emerson Mnangagwa, says Piers Pigou of the International Crisis Group, will lose credibility if he appears too close to the military.
It is absolutely critical for the new incumbents to be able to, I suppose, distance themselves as quickly as possible from the illegal actions of the armed forces here, or ostensibly what looks like the... I simply don't know how they're going to put lipstick on that pig.
But Chitio says the negotiators have a lot to discuss. The crisis came out of a long-running, bitter rift in the ruling ZANU-PF party, which Mugabe has led for decades. Observers saw the move to fire Mnangagwa as a step toward the installation of Mugabe's wife, Grace Mugabe, as vice president. That would have put the unpopular first lady next in line, behind her 93-year-old husband.
It's very delicate. There's also negotiations within the party, between the party and the opposition, between the powers that be currently and South Africa. So there's a lot of multiple negotiations, delicate negotiations. Too much talk too soon could do more harm than good, I think, is what the military are saying.
The military insists this is not a coup, and the powerful War Veterans Association called the action a bloodless correction. For that narrative to work, they need one thing that no one ever thought would be easy to get: for Zimbabwe's fiery, passionate leader to leave without a fight. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Anita. The military seizure of control in Zimbabwe stands out as an anomaly in Africa, where coups are now mostly rejected as a means of assuming power. Yet the reaction in Africa and around the world has been low-key. VOA's Adam Phillips has this report on why that might be.
The military says it has not carried out a coup. Instead, commanders say the forces are removing criminal elements surrounding President Robert Mugabe. The 93-year-old president remains in office and is safe, the military says, although he has not been seen in public and appears to be under house arrest. Ambassador John Campbell of the Council on Foreign Relations says that no matter what it's called, in most of Africa, there has been a consensus that the era of military takeovers has passed.
And the fact that there has been a coup in Zimbabwe, and it is a coup, will be seen as a step back.
The African Union says it's seriously concerned about the events in Harare, and the AU president has said it appears there has been a coup. The AU has strongly opposed military takeovers. Yet the Zimbabwe situation presents a challenge. Over nearly four decades in office, Mugabe has led an increasingly authoritarian government that has seen a once prosperous nation fall into economic ruin. Sarah Rich-Dorman teaches African politics at the University of Edinburgh.
Mugabe as an individual and often seems to get away with behaving in ways that might find other countries critiqued or challenged. President Mugabe has been very successful in standing up against the regional norm. And he is a very established, revered figure for many other African leaders and political activists on the continent. So it's a complicated situation. I think it's quite hard to know. And I think many organizations will tread quite carefully before intervening in Zimbabwe's domestic politics, and Zimbabweans themselves will not wish to see regional interference in their domestic politics.
Campbell says Mugabe is still revered as an icon of Zimbabwe's liberation movement when the country threw off British colonialism and white minority rule.
That narrative makes him extremely popular, particularly in rural areas. Now, the narrative is also somewhat false. He did throw out the white farmers. He did redistribute the land. But a good deal of that land got redistributed to his own cronies, as opposed to African farmers. But nevertheless, Mugabe remains an extremely popular figure across Africa, and that has meant that African leaders have been extremely reluctant to criticize him.
Because of that deference, Professor Dorman says it's possible to imagine a peaceful path ahead.
If a scenario can be manufactured whereby Mugabe can resign gracefully and in a way that seems respectful and step aside, I think that will be welcomed by many neighboring regimes who have been concerned about the instability, about the reluctance of the president to either name a successor or actually plot a transition, a succession strategy. Nobody wants to see military intervention on the continent.
Even if there is a peaceful transition of power, Ambassador Campbell advises against looking for any deep underlying principles in this struggle. He says it's not about competing styles of government. Instead, the military's action is essentially a factional fight over who will control the ruling ZANU-PF party. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Kenya's Supreme Court is in its last day of hearing arguments on two petitions contesting results of the October 26th presidential election. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta won in a landslide after challenger Raila Odinga urged his supporters to boycott the poll, which was a rerun of the August election that court declared invalid. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The two petitions were filed by a former lawmaker, Harun Mwau, and two human rights defenders, John Jomue and Khalif Khalifa. The petitioners argue the Electoral Commission committed illegalities by going ahead with the election, despite the opposition leader Raila Odinga pulling out of the race. Benjamin Musyoki represents Mwau. He argues the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission was supposed to carry out a new nomination process. after the annulment of the original August 8th poll.
When elections are annulled under Article 140, none of the previous candidates, none of the previous processes is saved. All processes are done away with. And actually, in your order, you said that election was null and void. So it's like it did not exist.
Mwau also argued the election should be revoked based on the violence witnessed in parts of the country and low voter turnout. The human rights defenders, Muir and Khalifa, argued that the Electoral Commission did not conduct the presidential election in all 290 constituencies as required by the constitution. The commission failed to deliver voting material to some opposition strongholds in the west of the country due to violent protests. But Attorney General Githu Muigai said this should not be a reason to annul the election.
What was the legal effect of the failure to hold an election in 25 constituencies? What was the legal effect, if any? None. Simple answer. None. Why? Because this constitution does not require majorities based on constituencies. It requires majorities based on counties.
The petitioners insist the October 26th poll must not stand. But Kenyatta lawyer Fred Ngati argues the court should put the country's interests first after months of political uncertainty.
The common good is that which is to the benefit of the entire nation. The common good in my submission would be to uphold the constitutional order so that we do not slide into darkness. Absent a constitutional order, the chances of sliding into darkness are very high.
The Supreme Court is expected to rule Monday on whether Kenyatta's win will stand or be annulled again. Whatever the outcome, the opposition has said they will not recognize the Kenyatta presidency and their struggle for electoral justice will go on. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 17 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabweans face a second day of political uncertainty with rumors surfacing about how and when President Robert Mugabe would relinquish control after nearly four decades in power. And Kenya's Supreme Court is in its last day of hearing arguments on two petitions contesting results of the October 26th presidential election. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Italy has defended its policy on blocking migrants in Libya. Rome says the deal, denounced as inhumane by the UN, was essential to stop boat departures towards Europe. On Tuesday, the United Nations lambasted the EU's policy towards migrants. It helps Libyan authorities intercept them as they try to cross the Mediterranean and returns them to what the UN calls horrific prisons in Libya. Libya has long been a major transit hub for migrants trying to reach Europe, and many of them have fallen prey to serious abuse by traffickers and others. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about Italy's new hard-line position on migrants, as well as the results of autopsies performed on the bodies of 26 migrant women found in the Mediterranean Sea.
Italy has rejected scathing criticism from the United Nations about its hard-line approach to blocking migrants seeking to reach Europe from Libya. The Interior Minister, Marco Minniti, has been particularly strong on this issue, and he addressed the Italian Parliament and said that Italy's hardline approach was essential for stopping migrant departures, even though the UN has said that Italy's policy is inhumane. And that comes as we're seeing widespread media coverage in Italy and around the world of that CNN report showing migrants being sold as slaves at auctions inside Libya. But the minister, Mr. Minniti, says there is no alternative to Italy's hardline approach of managing these migrant flows. And he says that Italy is not going to be compromising anytime soon.
Also, I understand that autopsies have been completed on the 26 Nigerian women who had died. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that's right. Post-mortem examinations have been conducted in Italy, in the city of Salerno, in the south of Italy. 25 of the girls, they were young migrant girls believed to be from Nigeria, believed to have died from asphyxiation in the water, drowning essentially. And one girl seemed to suffer from an injury or a wound to her liver. And what's really, really so sad about this, well, the whole thing is really a terrible tragedy. Two of the dead young women were pregnant. There seemed to be no trace of physical or sexual violence, but terribly upsetting to hear this news. And the prosecutors in southern Italy have also come out with the claim or the belief that at least 100 migrants are missing from that same vessel that was carrying those 26 women. So that's an interesting finding from the investigators. They seem to draw those conclusions based on the results of four search and rescue operations that were conducted off the coast of Libya on November the 3rd.
So I guess they are coming to the conclusion that these people have also drowned.
Yes, and now it's not clear if the 100 missing were on the same vessel, possibly on a different vessel, but certainly part of those rescue operations, according to these investigators, they are believed to have drowned. They are believed to have drowned on the same shipwreck that killed the 26 girls. So family members who survived the disaster have identified some of those victims. In other cases, investigators have managed to contact relatives after discovering phone numbers inside the victim's clothing, but some of the others have not been identified. And a funeral is going to be held in Italy on Friday in the city of Salerno, where a day of mourning has also been declared.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. The UN Special Mission in Libya has issued proposals for amending the political agreement among Libya's competing factions. The proposals were handed over to the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Akila Saleh. According to news reports, the Supreme Commander of the Armed Forces would head the Presidential Council. However, observers say it is not likely that the leader of the Libyan National Army, General Khalifa Haftar, will accept the proposal. Rhiannon Smith is the Managing Director of Libya Analysis in London. VOA reporter Mohammed Al-Shanawi asked her about General Haftar's stand on the issue.
The issue for Haftar is that if the Presidential Council has supreme command of the armed forces, then Haftar essentially will have to have oversight by the Presidential Council, and he can't just do what he wants. The other danger for him is that the Presidential Council could actually remove him from his position in command of the forces in eastern Libya currently, which would mean he would have even less control than he has now. And for Haftar, he really doesn't want that. He wants to be in a situation where he can make his own military decisions without any kind of oversight. As a result, although the UN envoy has submitted these amendments to the House of Representatives, I think it's very unlikely that they are going to approve these amendments, given that Article 8 is still giving control to the Presidential Council.
What do you make of the defection of a GNA Interior Ministry's special task force to join General Haftar's side?
Yes, so this refers to the Interior Minister in Benghazi, who was appointed by the Government of National Accord, or the GNA, in August. And since then, he's been trying to get support in eastern Libya. Last week, this fell apart and he was driven out of the city along with his supporters, switched sides back to Haftar and the LNA. This also reflected what was happening in western Libya, whereby Haftar's forces had gained some momentum there in Sabrata and elsewhere, and yet last week GNA forces defeated some of the LNA forces there and asserted their control.
Egypt is hosting a tripartite meeting that includes Algeria, Tunisia, and Egypt to discuss the situation in Libya and means to bolster its security and stability. Would that meeting support the UN-sponsored roadmap or tilt towards supporting General Haftar for security reasons?
Well, Egypt and Libya's other neighbors do, in theory, support the current UN roadmap. However, Egypt is a very powerful player, and its priority in Libya is the security of its western borders. And as a result, it works very closely with Haftar to try and provide that security. So, yes, that's its kind of main concern. However, I would say that Egypt doesn't support Haftar above all else. What they want is the security, and they use Haftar as a tool. And we've seen that in the last few weeks, Egypt has also hosted meetings between Haftar and their rivals in Misrata to try and reunify the army. So I think if Egypt sees this sort of reunification of Libya, the reunification of the armed forces as possible, it will support that, even if that means Haftar losing some of his power. However, I think in the interim, given that isn't really happening, I think that Egypt will continue to support the UN roadmap, but they will push the Haftar to have a strong role within that. So that may mean that they are not happy with the current amendments that are being proposed by Salami.
That was Rhiannon Smith, Managing Director of the London-based Libya Analysis. She spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi. The Trump administration is preparing to allow hunters to import the remains of elephants they kill in Zambia and Zimbabwe. The decision reverses a ban imposed by 2014 by the Obama administration. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service yesterday said the agency is reversing the ban because it thinks hunting elephants could bring much-needed revenue back into conservation and spur local communities toward conservation efforts. The new rules apply to elephants hunted in Zimbabwe on or after January 21st of 2016 and all elephants hunted in Zambia during 2016, 17, and 2018. The Great Elephant Census reported last year that Zambia had just over 21,000 elephants last year, while 82,000 elephants roam in Zimbabwe. Overall, elephant populations declined by 30% in 18 African countries between 2007 and 2014. African elephants are listed as threatened under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.